Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Nightlight. Step away from the mainstream and gather around as we enlighten the world and our realities and travel this cosmic journey we call life. Join us as we share with you and provide that beacon that can guide us all to a better way. Explore with us as we examine a metaphysical montage of spiritual insights, covering everything from the mundane to the magical, UFOs to unicorns, and everything in between. This is a time of awakening, of sharing and evolving, of spreading our wings and soaring on the cosmic breath of creation. Come and join with other light-minded spirits as we weave our lights together to seek understanding, enlightenment, and with a little luck, some wisdom. This is Nightlight, a reminder that you are never alone.
Welcome to Nightlight, everybody. This is one of my favorite shows because I have the privilege of having Mary Joyce with me. But before I talk to her and talk about her, I want to thank Ken Quiethawk for the amazing intro. Please look for him on the internet. He's a native storyteller, and he will amaze you with the wisdom and the beauty of the way they preserve their cosmology and their history, and they taught their children about the magic that was a part of their history. It's a way of relating facts to people that implant seeds in their minds and stay with them forever, and I think it's something we should all pay attention to and utilize within our lives. Now back to Mary Joyce. She is the editor of one of the most amazing websites out there. I encourage all of you to seek it out, look at it, wait till the show's over. It's called SkyshipsOverCashiers.com, and Mary is the editor, and she publishes all sorts of amazing news stories that don't make the local newspapers, but certainly are of great relevance to our lives. And the website is set up so that it's an easy read, it's a fascinating read. It will definitely titillate you for sure, and she has over 10 years of archives that are on there so that you can search a topic throughout the last decade or so and see all of the things she has gathered on different topics. And she is the consummate reporter. She doesn't put stuff up unless she's confirmed it, which makes the material even more exciting. And tonight we're going to be covering some of the latest articles that she has brought forth about Dr. Wernher von Braun and some of his conversations with one of the astronauts, Clark McClellan, and some of the things that they talked about, which are now making it into the general and into the public eye, so to speak. And I can't wait for her to talk about this stuff because it is phenomenal. So without further ado, welcome to the show, Mary.
Hi, I'm glad to hear you.
Glad to hear you, too.
Anyhow, I hope you're having a great evening.
I am. I'm having a fabulous evening, and this is the greatest way for me to kind of put the whipped cream on the top with the cherry, because the material that you put up on your website is so amazing, and for the longest time I would always buy the garbage newspapers when I went through the grocery line, and then I realized I didn't know half the people, or most of the people today that were written about, but it was garbage news. You just knew it was garbage news, and that there was very little truth to it. But with your website, because of your background, you're meticulous about making sure that your material is researched and to the best of your ability validated. And I so respect the work that you do when you do post the things that you do post.
Well, what you and I talked about before the show was to talk about Von Braun's private revelations about Mars and ETs. And
uh-huh.
As far as I know, that hasn't been put out there until just really, really recently. I think your audience might be interested in how I even came to do this story, and I think in the process it adds credibility to the story. And
okay.
It started on May 17th, and I had one of these big urges to go and look up Clark McClellan, who I met back in 1989. Have never been in touch with him since then, but spent a couple hours with him back, you know, it's decades ago now. And so I went to look him up. Well, I found out, first of all, that he died in April of this year, on the 22nd, and I also found out that he had been providing his papers, his private papers, to somebody else to publish as a book after his death, because the government had blocked all of his efforts to publish anything when he was still alive. It just wasn't going to happen. So I actually started looking him up on the day that the book was released, which
oh
I found kind of interesting right off the bat. And Clark McClellan is really the one that connects me to this story. And when I lived on Cocoa Beach between Patrick Air Force Base and the Kennedy Space Center, I met him and other mostly engineers who worked at NASA. He was an aerospace engineer for 35 years. He was trained as an astronaut and specially trained as a spacecraft operator. And that his job was to test, operate, and solve any vehicle problems from ground control. So he was very, very knowledgeable. While he was working on the, let's see which one it was the Saturn One mission, that's when he became friends with Wernher von Braun. Not only were they working on the same project, they were both engineers, engineers, but they also had an extreme interest in astronomy, in life on other planets, and this friendship developed. Well, what would happen is that von Braun would come in from Houston, you know, when this project was going on. He would especially take time with Clark when they would have award ceremonies, and they would have these at the different hotels on Cocoa Beach. And von Braun, who was a smoker, would take smoke breaks, and he would call Clark out to join him, and the two of them would sit on lounge chairs either by the pool or overlooking the ocean, and that's when these natural, very human conversations developed. And so knowing that setting, I think, gives some credibility to the information. I couldn't rely on my own memory of many things because it was a long time ago, so I got a hold of this book, and then I was able to quote things and not rely on my bad memory. So what he said was really quite fascinating. He was back in the 60s. He believed that there had been advanced life on Mars. He believed that debris field between Mars and Jupiter, you know, was a planet that exploded, and in the process, it destroyed the atmosphere on Mars. He felt at that time there was a very technologically advanced civilization on Mars, and that they were capable of space travel, and that when their atmosphere was being destroyed, he felt like he believed very strongly that they had the capacity to, you know, flee the place. The closest place to flee was Earth. And he made a statement, which kind of stood out in my mind. And he told Clark that he felt that at least some of the people in our culture today may be Martians, which I thought was an interesting statement. He talked about that he felt there were still life forms that were, I don't mean low life forms, I mean intelligent life forms, that were still living on Mars, probably beneath the surface. So those are some of the things that he shared with Clark when they were out on the beach.
Wow. That might even explain the Rh negative factor, too.
People have tied that to that idea and also to the Atlantans. The Basque people, what is it, in northern France, they have a high percentage of the Rh negative and have a very, you know, nice look about them, you know, with the light eyes and the fair skin. And many people have speculated that they were remnants of the civilization of Atlantis that, you know, went under. And their language is totally different. It doesn't relate to any other kind of language. And there's a number of reasons that they think there might be that, you know, distant past DNA connection. It might have been Atlantis. It might have been the Martians. Who knows? But it's an interesting angle to pursue.
And, you know, it also could possibly explain, and this is a big reach, but there are... Throughout history, especially on the metaphysical thing, there are mentions of the shining ones or the light ones, and they have been. It's been speculated that they were a very advanced race that came to Earth before human. Homo sapiens.
Had really
Homo
evolved,
sapiens.
Right?
Yeah. And that there's talk of them in a number of places, and I'm hunting as much material as I can up about them because it makes sense to me that they may well have been a civilization that came to Earth and sort of seeded the planet with humanity.
Well, one
and
of the statements that Von Braun made was he said that the Earth is a nursery of many cosmic races from the stars.
Ah.
He also said we are being visited by other intelligences from other stars. And when Clark asked him some questions, he not only admitted that he had seen UFOs in Germany and in the USA, but that he had actually met... somebody of the Aryan race that comes from Aldebaran. I'm probably saying that wrong, but it's a star, giant star formation. He said, yes, I have seen real ETs from that particular star system. And he's seen them himself.
Wow.
He said, Clark asked him what they look like, and he said they're taller, and many have the blonde hair and blue eyes. I have heard others of us Germans at the Kennedy Space Center admit they saw them.
Yeah, that's been a description that not only has come from Von Braun, because that I've read before, but Billy Meyer also describes some of the visitors that way as well. So that, but. To actually have met some or seen some, that's, you know, what a come down to have them look so much like us that you can't, you know, you can't tell the difference. You know, you kind of think, that, you know, where's the antennas and stuff like that.
Apparently they're not all looking gray and reptilian and very strange. Even when I was doing a lecture, actually maybe a good decade ago, out in Las Vegas, or actually Laughlin, and it was the International UFO Congress, and there was a little guy who looked human who was on the elevator with me during that convention. I swear to God, he was an alien. I mean, there was just something about him that was just very, very peculiar, and he kind of I don't know, he kind of glided away. It was a very strange feeling. So,
well,
yes,
considering, considering that they've been here for possibly millions of years, I mean, some of them, it's kind of like they're as much Earthlings as we are in some cases. And the name of
that's what it seems to be.
The name of McClellan's book is Space, the Final Frontier. And, you know, when I was speaking to you earlier, you said it's not an easy read, but it's a fascinating one, I would think.
Yeah, and I was telling you how I read it. It's got an index in the front, and so I always have I destroy all books with yellow highlighters. And So what I did was I would read the chapters that I was the most intensely interested in and then cross them off and, you know, go down the line. So it was sort of like I wanted my dessert first.
Well, yeah, I would too. I would pick the elements that, you know, really kind of you know, appealed to me and kind of enticed me into this one I have to read. One of the other ones that one of the other articles you've got up that you know, goes into, you know, or comes close to being connected to this book was the fact that the Challenger was sabotaged.
Yes. And again, I knew of some of this when I lived there in Florida, but I'm not going to quote my bad memory. So when his book came out, I was able to do not only the article about von Braun, but I did several with the title NASA Secrets. And one NASA secret was the space shuttle Challenger was sabotaged. Another one was an ET was caught twice by NASA cameras, you know, on the space shuttle, that there are Nazis in Antarctica, and that there are ET structures and evidence of mining on the moon. And those were all ones where I was able to, you know, read his book and pull from something concrete, and that's important.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I love the fact that you confirm before you report, and, you know, that's so important. And, you know, it's so sad that he's, you know, passed away because, of course, I love to read a book and then talk to the author. And so unless I channel him.
Oh, that would have been a good one. That would have been a real good one. But it's really quite sad. I won't elaborate on it a whole lot. But Clark McClellan felt very, very strongly that the public had a right to know more than the government was allowing the public to know. And he basically got in trouble because he didn't totally keep his mouth shut. And even though he'd been there for 35 years and had key positions, they got rid of him. And after 35 years, not only did he lose his job, he lost all of his benefits, and they kept blackballing him so that he couldn't get other jobs. They interfered so he couldn't publish his information. And so in many ways, he really suffered in the later years of his life.
Well, you know, it's the government supposedly, and I say this, you know, with a smirk on my face, releasing, you know, all their information on UFOs, and you just know that they're not. I mean, the reality is a UFO is an unidentified flying object, yes. There are lots of them out there, but they could be ours or Russia's or Japan's or China's or Korea's, or, you know, they could be Mexican. They could be, I mean, a UFO doesn't necessarily say there are little green men inside ready to invade the planet. So,
right.
They
don't want people to think that they, you know, they're still fighting the release of information that there is intelligence that is not human that's operating these vehicles. And some
exactly.
of the most convincing evidence that I've found, for example, there is a SOHO satellite. There's two of them, actually, that monitor the sun and take a picture every 15 minutes, and there's one on each side of the sun. you can actually monitor the feed from that, which I occasionally do. And we have published in the past photos of these humongous ships near the sun, and they're all bigger than the planet Jupiter. And there's no way that we humans could build something like that. So when you look at those kind of things, you know, this idea of, you know, scooting around the reality of ET intelligence out there is just ridiculous. Also, let me share with you something that I haven't even posted yet. It's going to go on the website, I don't know, maybe by the end of the week. But I was doing some investigation with Google Earth Mars. It's one of the little detective things I do periodically, and I have found some incredible things on the planet. And the most recent thing is I found 27 entrances into Mars, and they're all in a line. And they stretch out over 16 miles, and they're not small. The smallest one that I was able to measure was 399 feet. Well, say it's 400. 400 feet, that's like four football fields. That's no small entrance. And the biggest one is over 1,000 feet. And in the past, going back a number of years now, I have discovered entrances into the planet before. But in this case, I quit looking at it with the north at the top. I put the north in the east position, so I was looking at the, you know, the planet from a different direction, and I found these things all lined up, which I would not have found if I had just scooted around with north in its normal position. But 27 of those in a line spread out over 16 miles, you know, that's not something regular. And these are square-cut entrances, like garage entrances. They're huge.
Wow.
So who's doing those? And then I've twice I've gotten photos again from Google Earth Mars of UFOs, big ones that are spaceships that have landed on the surface of the planet. And, you know, one of them I think is like 3.5 miles in diameter. That is no small little ship. Another one, probably in the same size, I don't have the figures right in front of me right now, but you can see the skid mark, and it was over, I think, 4,000 feet before it actually, you know, hit the Martian soil in a significant way and came to a halt. Don't tell me there's not ET life out there that's, you know, beyond what they're letting us see right now.
I love it. I mean, you're a cosmic archaeologist.
I don't know if there is such a thing, but it is sure. It's, you know, you don't always come up with treasures that you find, but when you do, it's kind of thrilling.
Well, yeah. I mean, you've put some phenomenal screenshots up on your website over time. That, I mean, there's no way that these are natural occurrences. I mean, they're obviously man-made, man-made is not a proper term. But they're not
intelligently made. They're made by intelligent beings. I don't know how else to clarify it. And that's not the only thing. So I found entrances, I found UFOs, and I have found two space stations. They look like biospheres. The first one I found was back in 2011. And so, you know, you can go back into those files and you can find it for yourself. But it was more than 652 miles in length. Again, no small thing. Then 5 years later in 2016, I found a larger one at the South Pole, and this was over 7,000 feet in length. Again, no small thing. And I tied it together with some research that was done by a concept artist, and his name is Brian Verstig. I'm sure I don't know how to say it, but he does conceptual drawings for space exploration, and he does it for Deep Space Industries and Inner Orbital Systems and the Mars Foundation and National Geographic and New Science and Mars Exploration Magazine. So he is very well known. So in one article, again, back in the 2016 archives, I show one of the illustrations and then the actual biosphere on Mars. Now, the one on Mars is more blurry, but it clearly is not some kind of natural phenomena.
Wow. I would be so shocked if you didn't send a whole bunch of people to Google Earth for the Moon and Mars, because I know that you know, this is, you know, first of all, our government can't airbrush all of this out.
But they do sometimes. There have been times, Barbara, when I have found something, posted it on the website, and within the next day or 2 days later, it has been blurred out. New strips have been put in there, and they've done things to, you know, make it unfindable. And that indicates to me that whatever I have shown is a very active place.
Well, yeah, and even the Antarctic. I mean, that's something that I mean, we had Operation High Jump with Admiral Berg, and you know, they've kind of let it all go. Now there are all sorts of exploration teams in the Antarctic, but they have been told not to fly over certain places and things like that, which leads one to believe that there's something they're trying to hide there, of course.
Now, one of the I've used the same, you know, Google detective tool in Antarctica, and that's a really good example of where they have blurred things out almost instantly. I found two very large entrances into Antarctica, and the largest one, where you could fly a major jet into with, you know, 50 feet on each side of the wingtips, It's like somebody spilled India ink on it the following day that I had it posted. So if anybody starts becoming a Google Earth detective and you see something interesting, take a screenshot. And every keyboard, as far as I know, has something that says print screen. And just hit that and put it in your files and save it, just in case it's one of those things that will disappear. And to be helpful to people, almost always, sometimes I can't do it, but almost always I have the coordinates for what I have found. So you can copy it and put it right into the search bar for Google Earth, Mars, or Google Earth, and it'll take you right to the spot that I'm talking about. And I do that because we have so many blankety-blank-blank people who get a kick out of Photoshopping stuff that isn't real. And so when you find real things, you have to bend over backwards to, like, prove that it's real.
Uh-huh. Well, it is fascinating to me. Especially with those large ships, I guess mothership is the best term I can use, the huge ones around the moon. I've always thought that those large ships, and the smaller ones, but you know, the bigger ones more importantly, I do believe that in some way they gather energy or fuel from being that close to the sun. I don't think they're there to improve their tans. I think that there's
a
reason.
I totally agree with you. We've got one photo where there is a round UFO, like with an umbilical cord, that connects to the sun. It stayed there for, I don't know, a considerable length of time before it disconnected. And that would certainly support what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I go back to Star Trek, and I'm not sure what they used for fuel, but but there over the last 30 or 40 years, there have been every now and then, you know, the pictures of these large objects really close to the sun, obviously not burning up, so that there has to be a reason that they're that close. And the only thing I could think of was, you know, it's not a cruise ship that's, you know, doing a tourist thing to the planets and stuff like that.
Well, maybe it is.
Well, if it is, then Planet Earth is probably a comedy channel that, you know, they're getting a big kick out of most of the time because of how we're behaving down here.
There's two reasons that I think that. Part of it is There was a man in the Netherlands who got in touch with me back in 2013 and 2014, and then it's like he just disappeared. But he would take these original NASA satellite photos that had captured these large objects around the sun, and then he had the ability to use his computer skills to get rid of the debris and the interference and enlarge these images. Incredible detail. And if people want to take a look at some of his stuff, go to our Global Links section. In fact, most of what we're talking about is in Global Links. And open up the 2013 archives, scroll way down to the bottom, and then start scrolling back up, because the way the sections work, you know, you build on top of what you've already put in there. So the beginning of 2013 is at the bottom.
Gotcha. Well, you know, when you stop and think about it, solar panels gather energy to create electricity. So being that close to the sun and yet not there, solar flares probably put out high-intensity energy. Obviously, they do. I mean, those sun flares can disturb our atmosphere and everything. So being that close to it, it's a powerful energy. And if there's a way of drawing it in and utilizing it for fuel, holy mackerel, that's amazing. But
makes you wonder how they do it. But you're right.
Well, and almost.
Go ahead.
Almost every you know, there are suns all over the place. So that hopping around the galaxy, there would be no limit to fuel. So that it wouldn't be something you had to store. It could be something that you could regenerate whenever you had to, which would be so cool.
You know, going back to the idea of cruise ships going through the universe, there is a man who you may be familiar with. His name is Charles Hall. And when he was in the military, he was a weatherman, and a weatherman that went out and set up the balloons and, you know, made sure everything was all right. He was near Area 51. And nobody wanted the job that he had, not because the weather job was bad, but these people that would get sent out there, they would freak out. And he was the only one that didn't totally freak out and run away. And there were what he called the tall white ETs that had a base there that the government knew about, the government allowed. And he talked about these ships would come in and stay for X amount of time and then take off, and he made it sound like it was a bus, you know, that just pulled into Earth, you know, and brought tourists. And he was very brave, as I said, because the other officers ran away. And he just overcame his fear. It wasn't that he wasn't fearful. And what eventually happened was some of the tall white ETs, especially the women, would like to get dressed up and try to pass as humans, and they would go into Las Vegas, which, you know, is a goofy town to start with, so if people see strange people, they're not going to get all bent out of shape like they might if you landed in the middle of St. Louis. And it was like a challenge for them to kind of, I don't know, pass the sniff test, I guess.
Blend in. Yeah. I remember this story. This was a great story. I remember this. I can't remember where it was, you know, time-wise on your website, but I do remember it, and it was fascinating.
Long time ago, because I can't remember all the details.
Yeah, I remember that they didn't want him getting near the kids, that they took the kids out to play, but they were very protective of them.
Right, they
and,
had these wand. I'll call it a magic wand, and if they felt like they were being threatened, they could zap you with it. And they actually were afraid of humans because we have a whole lot more body strength than they have, because they are kind of frail-looking, tall, white ETs. To them, we must have been like confronting a gorilla in the forest or in the jungle.
Uh-huh.
And, they were very careful that their children weren't messed with. But they also brought the children to observe him.
Oh, yeah, like
that
a zoo.
Like a, yeah, well, I don't know if it was quite like that, but it was a form of entertainment that they could bring the kids out and watch him do his work or whatever he did.
And the women loved the catalogs.
Yes, yes. Very good. Good memory. I'm not sure I would have brought that up on my own.
Well, I happen to be a catalog freak, too. So, you know, it was like, of course they like the catalogs. But the Army did supply them with catalogs for clothing and stuff.
Yeah, there was a cooperative arrangement with the Tall Whites. Now, what the part of the military was doing that he would not have known about, I have no idea. But, you know, they would bring their, park their ships, let's say in a garage in a mountain, and then the side of the mountain would close up and it looked like nothing was there.
I
think there's cruise ships going around the universe, and every once in a while they make stops here at Earth.
Well, I wish they'd tell us about things like the Nazca lines and stuff like that, because that still remains, you know, an amazing mystery to me. It's not galactic graffiti, I'm sure, but there's something else there, and I don't know what it is. I know there's metal under what one would consider the runways and stuff, but they sliced the top of a mountain off to create that space.
Yeah, that was quite impressive. It really is.
Yeah, not an easy feat, you know. And there's no piles of rubble, so that they not only sliced it off, but they disposed of the material.
Right, and how did they do that?
I don't know.
I just dropped my phone.
Well, that's okay.
Another thing I wanted to tell you that we had posted again based on information from Clark's book was he was friends with David Scott, who was one of the crew members of the Apollo 15. And
mm-hmm.
they were buddies. And so he talked to Clark, and he told him that they had seen whitish metallic objects flying overhead when they were, you know, headed toward the moon. And he described them as, quote, they were very fast critters. And that sounds like a legitimate quote, to, you know, say the least.
Oh, yeah.
He also saw structures off in the distance. And he said they were like glass or crystalline. He talked about finding tracks for some kind of a vehicle, and nobody, neither from our country or Russia or Japan or anybody else who might have advanced technology, had been up there with a vehicle of any kind, and yet there were these tracks. And when they followed the tracks, there were signs that there was a mining operation going on. So I thought, and another thing, this shows you how they keep clamping down on these people that have so much information. David Scott had taken 15 photos when he was seeing all this, and they took them away from him, and he took them. He really wanted to see them again or, you know, have them again. And so they let him see one, just one of those 15 photos. And it had already been, the structures had already been erased.
Photoshopped, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It does make you wonder, I mean, because of the Internet, because of the way information gets out there today, keeping this stuff under wraps is stupid because it is out there. One of the things I'd love to see is the contract with the aliens that Eisenhower signed.
Yeah, that would be interesting to read, wouldn't it?
Well, and it makes, and you know, when I heard about that, I thought, how stupid is that? It's like we made contracts with the Indians, which we had no intention of keeping. Why would an alien race make a contract with a primitive world like this and expect that, you know, we would respect it? I mean, it's ridiculous. If they wanted to test people, they could just go ahead and test it. We couldn't stop them.
That's
so
correct.
So it
and apparently, what I understand is the ET. Now we're talking Grays now. They didn't live up to their end of the bargain, and I guess there, as I understand it, there was an agreement that the ETs could abduct, you know, like a small number of people,
mm-hmm.
In exchange for technological information. Well, they didn't stay within the limits. I mean, the abduction stories are, you know, quite phenomenal. And what is interesting that I talked to one gal myself a bunch of years ago. We did do a story on her, and she was abducted. The traditional story that you hear, but she saw U.S. military soldiers there also. So, what's going on?
Well, if that's the case, and you know, if there were soldiers there, there are soldiers or you know, at Area 51. My good friend Jeannie, who was the co-host for me originally way back, her father was one of the guards at Area 51. And he never said anything to any of his family. He would just
That's
smile
typical.
And wait. And, you know, it's kind of like, I mean, it's a terrible, cold thing to say, but on his deathbed, you know, couldn't he have whispered, you know, yes, there were aliens there, or something,
right.
You know.
Some of the people do. Some of the people do. When they finally get to the point where they realize, you know, they're on the way out, some of them have come clean. But think of the burden that these people have carried with them for usually decades.
Right. And what I mean, if there were no conspiracy theorists out there, or if there was no other information out there, keeping a secret, you know, okay, I got that. But because the information is so much a part of our everyday life, that they're, I mean, all they have is their own personal experience. They don't have anything that they can prove their stories to. So why hold them to that kind of a secretive thing? I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. The Rendlesham Forest guy who got the download of the binary code that talked of a future generation of us, I think by 800 years or so, why has that been kept under wraps? I mean, originally they did a study, and their conclusion was that the public couldn't take knowledge of the fact that there were aliens here.
I used to feel very, very strongly that it was, you know, that the public could handle it. But what I've seen in the last 4, 5, 6 years, when I see all these people with the QAnon theories, when I see these people and all these conspiracies that they come up with, when I see people scared to death to do this or that, and I see the level of fear in so many people, and I see the level of, I don't know, I want to say lack of education. I mean, basic education, basic curiosity. There's a lot more of that in our world than I ever thought there was. And so maybe we would have a mess on our hands if this got revealed too quickly. Maybe there's some truth to that. But they're hiding way too much. And this, I don't know what to say.
Well, I mean, okay, so we have aliens pouring in over our borders. And, you know, I mean, we already have aliens. So, the fact that that our government has hid from us the fact that they are, if indeed they are, in contact with alien races from other planetary systems, but when you look at where the information is, even the current government doesn't know about it, and so that makes one wonder who is actually in charge.
Right, and there's certainly those within our known government who know what you and I are now talking about. They absolutely know. But I don't doubt for a minute that there is a level of control and power that goes way beyond that. I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to dig up the information that I want, but there is a secret space program. And
yes,
I
there
would
is.
Like to, somebody has been acknowledging, and I'm going, I need to find out more about that.
Well,
but
Corey Goode was part of it.
I just can't say that again.
Corey Goode was part of it. He was on the 20 and back. Laura Eisenhower was supposedly, they tried to draft her into it, and she said no. Have you ever watched the Above Majestic YouTube?
I don't think so.
Check out Above Majestic. I think you have to pay $4 or $5 or something like that to actually see it. It's 2 hours of amazing material, and it's the kind you can check.
Okay.
But I think we have to get you an interview with Corey Goode. Or have you interviewed him already?
No, I have not. I have not. Mainly because it's really hard to make that believable for people.
I know. But today...
It's very, very difficult. And probably that would be a big reason I haven't tackled that one.
Well, yeah, you have no way of proving it, and if you did have a way of proving it, you'd probably disappear. So,
yeah, and I'm not ready for that.
No, but you know, look at all of the things that you're getting little tidbits on. You're getting little tidbits on the Antarctic stuff. You're getting tidbits on the lunar stuff and Mars stuff. And, you know, 10 years ago, this wouldn't have been even something that you would be able to put out there for fear, you know, people would say, oh, that's just garbage. But not today. Now people eat this up and want to find more material on it. So,
right,
so
and that's
general,
encouraging.
The general public is far more educated. If interterrestrial aliens came to my door. Now you have to be specific about what kind of alien you're talking about. Came to my door, I'd ask him in and offer him a drink, or her, or whatever. I think we are so much more mature as far as the probability of what's out there. I mean, when the book, when Stryber's book came out, was that Contact? What was the name of that book?
It's the one with the alien face or the gray face on it. I found it very unsettling. I do remember that.
Well, you know, and I hate to say this, and you know, I probably will never get Whitley Stryber on the show because of it. I think he is an amazingly great science fiction author.
And?
But I don't buy the book at all.
I know is it was unsettling and it didn't feel right to me. And I even went and bought another one of his books, and I was left with that same unsettled feeling. I've never done a story on his books.
It didn't ring true to me. It was like, you know, he's a great science fiction author, but I feel the same way about Zachariah Sitchin. He's dead, so no chance he'd be on the show anyhow. Patrick, my late husband, hated people comparing him with Sitchin because Patrick's work was all validated by what was in the Bible, and Sitchin was sort of misquoting the Bible to his own purposes in many places. But there are people that quote his books chapter and verse, the same as there are biblical people who quote chapter and verse.
Mm-hmm.
And so you know, our capacity to investigate and embrace is great. Our discernment leaves a lot to be desired.
that's a good way to put it. And you just have to go with, I don't know, all we really have is what I call that gut feeling. And
yeah.
if it feels unsettled, then leave it alone. Don't mess with it. And there's
well,
been a number of topics where I feel that way. And then there's times when I'm just driven to do something, like I got to do this. And like that's what happened when I looked up Clark McClellan after decades. And it was on the day his book was published. I'm going, oh, okay, that's why I was nudged.
How synchronistic is that? Yeah,
Right, and I had such compassion for him when I met him because he was still working for NASA. I think his final year was, I think it was 91. I met him in 89, but they were already, you know, making moves on him. And I saw fear, I saw anger, I saw frustration. I had such compassion for him. And when this book of his came out, I decided I would do my part to share at least some of his information.
Well, I think you did a great job. I know that it's interesting because I saw a UFO. It landed on my campus when I was in college. And the abuse you take when you admit that you've seen something like that, and, you know, I had no pictures. I have no way to prove it. I saw a UFO.
It would have been terrible then. I don't think it would be terrible now.
Oh, no, now it's not. Now it would be hell. You know, that's really cool. And, you know, what are you having for lunch? But over the years, now that was in the 60s, and the mental abuse you get, and people were saying, you know, don't talk about that because people will think you're crazy. And and it's sort of like, but I know what I saw. I'm not nuts. I know
what
I saw.
Well, they deliberately tried to make people feel like they were crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, that was a technique.
No doubt about it. And when I, you know, interviewed for jobs and stuff like that, and they saw where I went to school, it was like, did you see the UFO? I said, yeah, I was there when that landed. And I wouldn't go further because, you know, you're crazy if you believe in that stuff. And J. Allen Hynek was out there declaring everything was swamp gas.
And he changed
what
his
I saw
eventually, too, didn't he?
Oh, he did, but it was many years later.
Right.
And, you know, he was doing what the government wanted him to do, which was cover up something that they couldn't explain. So, you know, but then when they did that study and they decided that, what was it, that the UFOs did not pose any threat and that they weren't going to talk about them because the public couldn't handle it. But that has been the procedure for decades about all of this stuff. Look at the battle for Los Angeles with those UFOs that we fired on, and our shells just bounced out off their shields. I mean, Patrick and I interviewed a man who lived there, observed it, and he went out on the beaches the next day and picked up the debris, and the government paid him for every piece of debris he brought to them.
Wow.
So, I mean, these things have been happening, and they're pretending they don't happen. They're pretending that, you know, that we're living in a bubble. And so someday this bubble's going to burst and a ton of information is going to be released. I think what the government has released is just sheer and utter garbage.
It's baby stuff. It's just baby stuff. So.
Yeah. I mean,
let me throw out another idea just to get everybody's minds working.
Okay.
I've done an article, read the book by William Tompkins. I won't get into it a whole lot, but he was a confidential advisor to von Braun and Dubus, who was the second in command with the rocketry. Okay, so that's the essence of him.
Uh-huh.
And he, again, in his older years, said that there were Pleiadian ETs working at NASA, and that they were very attractive women that supposedly were hired as secretaries, But they were the ones that were giving them information, and every time they did, it worked. And it was because of them that the space program, after Kennedy essentially launched it, that was the reason it grew so rapidly. So I was thinking about that, and then I saw an old rerun of Jeannie, the old TV show.
Yeah.
Do you remember that? I Dream of Jeannie. That's the name of it. And
yeah,
she was like this magical person working with the people at the Space Center or in the Air Force at that time period. And I'm going, could that have inspired that show? Could somebody have had enough inside information that they could have inspired that show to come into existence?
Well,
how's that for fiction, if nothing else?
I think that, you got a point. And I know they showed a picture of one of those, of Maria Orsach. I can't pronounce her last
name.
Right,
back in the Hitler days. Mm-hmm.
Back in the Hitler days, that she was supplying the Nazis with information, and somebody showed Billy Meyer a picture of her, and his reaction immediately was, that's Semyasi, that's the alien that I worked with for so many years.
And
so,
very attractive, right?
Oh, very attractive, yes. Long blonde hair, very Nordic-looking,
mm-hmm.
beautiful woman.
Yep.
Not that we don't have beautiful people on this planet.
Harder to find down here, though. You know, we seem to have really messed up our DNA.
Yeah, that's very true. But I hate to think that anybody who's actually, qualifies as quote-unquote beautiful now could possibly be an alien with a purer form of DNA than we have today. But, I think it can't be the government releasing information, because I don't think the government has the information. I believe that there's got to be a deep state of some sort that has the information that we're looking for. Because it would seem to me that I know Kennedy was going to release information, and he was he died. So was that part of the reason he was gotten rid of? I don't know. But
I don't know either.
So
but many people have said that they think that's the reason he was killed, because he was going to, make this public.
Well, and if I can't remember where I read it or saw it or whatever, but I do believe that Donald Trump was briefed on the whole secret space program, and that's why he formed the space program, so that it would be there and open so it could merge into the program that's already out there and fully functional.
Yeah, I think the program was there long before Donald Trump, and I doubt very much that they shared very much information with him.
No, I don't think he was given details, but I think he was made aware that there was already a program out there, and so he created one in reality so that at some point in time they could merge together, I think. I read someplace that he had been briefed to a degree, and I think Above Majestic was probably where I heard that. That the presidents now were being briefed, starting with Trump, but I don't know. I don't know if Biden has been briefed, and don't get me started there. But
from what I understand, I think the older George Bush knew a lot. I mean, he was the one that told Jimmy Carter he didn't have enough. He didn't have a right to know. Now, that's pretty gutsy.
Yeah, it's very much like that. The Independence Day, where the president is told, "Well, you didn't need to know," and one of the other characters said, "Do you really believe there's a $500 toilet seat?"
Interesting. So anyhow, let me do a plug again for Clark's book. It's called Space.
Okay.
The Final Frontier. That's the big title. And the secondary title is Secrets NASA Doesn't Want You to Know. Space, The Final Frontier, Secrets NASA Doesn't Want You to Know. And I think anybody who's deeply interested in these kind of subjects would find it interesting. For people who just like casual, easy reading, I don't think it's for them. Not that it's that hard to read, but it gets into a lot of stuff that people may or may not want to know. But there's a lot of good information in there for the sincerely curious people.
Okay, and your website is skyshipsovercashiers.com. Everybody should go look at it. We're down to the final seconds again. Mary, thanks so much for sharing all your information with us. It's just always such a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you, and I enjoy talking to you. Sorry I trip over my tongue sometimes.
Well, yeah, welcome to my world. Clearly we're not aliens. We're very human. But I look forward to you coming back again next month and inspiring us and tiddling us so that we start looking outside of our reality and inside of ourselves. So thanks again, and we will talk to you next month.
You take care.
You too. Bye-bye now. And good night, everybody. Check us out on YouTube. And let us know you're there by subscribing to our channel and keeping us on our toes and making sure that we are sharing with you the best information that we can find out there to keep you curious and informed and entertained and challenge you to look a little bit deeper into a lot of things. Good night now.